Well, Song of Solomon, chapter 3, at the end of Song chapter 2, verses 16 and 17, it's pretty clear that Solomon has slept with his illicit Egyptian girlfriend. They had had sex. And now in chapter 3, you read a description of a nightmare that the girl has afterwards. And the summary takeaway of all this is that illicit relationships don't work. Well, she's got this thing about, I seek him whom my soul loves, I seek him but I can't find him. Well, this is all the language of condemnation, seeking but not finding. It didn't seem to work out. It was a relationship that was very difficult. To describe the Song of Solomon as this idyllic love song, I mean, read it. It's not an idyllic love song. There's moments of passion and then all this struggle and pain because they're not doing things the right way around. It's not an idyllic love song, not at all. And so she says, I'm going to go up now and go about the city, verse 2, in the streets and in the squares, and seek him. And again, she doesn't find him. She imagines herself walking the streets of Jerusalem while he's confined in the palace, but she can't find him. And then the watchmen that go about the city find her. And all the way through the Song of Solomon, there is this conflict between the girl, the Egyptian girl, and the daughters of Jerusalem, that is the young women of Jerusalem, whom Solomon really ought to have married, or married one of them, and the watchman in the city. She's always feeling this conflict between herself and the culture of Solomon, and all she really wants is to have him back in Egypt. And then verse 4, she finds him whom my soul loves. I held him, and I wouldn't let him go until I'd brought him into my mother's house, into the room, the bedroom of her who conceived me. Well, there was a tradition in Egypt that discussions about marriage were to be held in the mother's bedroom. And that's clearly what she has in mind. But she wants to bring him to Egypt. This is quite natural. I wouldn't see this girl as particularly a bad woman. She desperately loves him, or she probably was in love with an image of Solomon that she had in her mind, and she wants to bring him to Egypt. She's not comfortable in Israel. And this is the whole problem with marriage to someone who does not share your beliefs and your spiritual culture. And it's not only an issue of marriage, it's an issue of any relationship, of association, friendship, etc. It's not that you must be separate from the world as a sort of a command. I would just say that if really your heart and soul is based around the things of the Lord Jesus and his Father and the things of his future kingdom, you will naturally sort of gravitate to those who have that same perspective. It's as simple as that. So she wants to bring him in her dream back to Egypt, into her mum's place, into her mum's bedroom, so they could sort out the wedding arrangements and get married there. And she says that I found him and I held him and wouldn't let him go. Well, I know the Song of Solomon concludes with the breakup of the couple, but that is not to say that they did not ultimately get married. Because Solomon laments in Ecclesiastes 7:26 his relationship with a woman whose hands were as bands, and his relationship with her was like she caught him and wouldn't let him go and dragged him into a net. Well, that is what happened. That's why I suggest that crazy and totally hopeless and imbalanced as this relationship was, they did go ahead and get married. And he said in Proverbs 7:27, he's warned young Hebrew men about Gentile women. Her house is the way to Sheol, to the grave, going down to the rooms of death. But in Proverbs 7:13 and Proverbs 5:8, the Gentile woman who he's warning about, she caught him. So therefore, come not near the door of her house. Her house is the chambers of death, the bedrooms of death. And yet that's exactly what this girl dreams of doing, grabbing hold of Solomon, not letting him go, dragging her into the chambers of her mother. So it's incredible that Solomon knew all the theory, but at the very same time, he was doing absolutely the opposite. I suggested earlier that God gave the book of Proverbs to Solomon as part of the wisdom that he was given, and then at the same time, this was early in his reign, he was involved with this girl and with various other Gentile women. So this is the great lesson, that you can know the theory but not personalize it, and you can, it seems almost the more you know of what is right, the more you're tempted to do that which is wrong, to break it. This is the lesson of Romans 7, where Paul basically says that about how he finds his experience. Yeah, you put a toddler in a room and say you can touch what you want, but not the red ball. They're going to touch the red ball. It's the lesson of Adam and Eve in Eden. Eat, eat, God said. Go on, eat all the fruit of all the lovely trees, but not that one. And that was the one, of course, they ate. And Adam and Eve, every man and every woman. Let's not say that, oh, well, I wouldn't have done that. Yes, you would have done. That's the whole point of the story, or the history. It really did happen. But the point is that that is every man and every woman. And so we who have a knowledge of God's ways, who know the Bible, etc., we need to be particularly aware of this, that it is just part of being human and how we are wired, that the more you know, the more likely you are to try and break it. Now you may say, ah, so don't tell me anymore, I won't study the Bible anymore. No, that is a negative view. Because if really in your heart you believe, if you accept this not just as knowledge, but as a truth that you personally trust and will live by, then you know, the law is not a chain. It's not, because man is not a dog. God's laws, God's ways are not a chain or not a leash that's burdensome to the poor animal. No, his laws are there to encourage us in a sort of self-reinforcing upward spiral of spirituality. So the problem with Solomon, as you see clearly from all this, is that he just didn't personalize it. He knew all this stuff as theoretical wisdom, but he just didn't personalize it, and that's why you can see all the contrasts between his own personal feelings and position in the book of Ecclesiastes and the wisdom that he teaches in Proverbs, and the same here with Song of Solomon. You can see the contrasts. So this girl is paranoid in this dream or nightmare. Verse 5, that the daughters of Jerusalem are going to stimulate Solomon. He's going to get attracted to them. She's terrified. He's going to get attracted to his fellow Hebrew girls who he really ought to have been marrying. And then she has this weird nightmare. Verse 7, it's Solomon's, well, carriage, the NEV said, but it's the word for bed, and I think the AV uses the word bed. She has a dream of Solomon's bed. It's huge, and it's guarded by 60 mighty men of the mighty men of Israel, and they've all got swords, like they are guarding his bed. And this bed, verse 9, is of the wood of Lebanon, and it's glorious. It's got a bottom of gold, verse 10, a seat of purple. Its midst is paved with love. So she sees this marital bed of Solomon's in a very grandiose way in her nightmare, and this bed, verse 10, is for the daughters of Jerusalem. This was her nightmare, that actually he would marry not her, but a Hebrew girl. And the Song of Solomon is a really unique insight, a very unique insight, I think, a window into the psychology of people in love, of people's fears, and the conflict which there is between the believer and the unbeliever on a psychological level. And you know, the simplest takeaway is that illicit relationships that God did not intend are very, very painful. And in the final end, I don't think they work. Go God's way. That is the simple message. You just see it exemplified in human life all around you. Those who go for the external, who just want to do whatever feels good, whatever comes into their head. It's not the way to happiness, is it? Look at all the broken lives, broken families, parentless children, etc. It is not the way to happiness. It really is not. And of course, that is true in all areas, really. And then she says, go forth, you daughters of Zion, and see King Solomon with the crown with which his mother has crowned him on the day of his weddings. Well, I don't know if that's her being sarcastic. She's very catty about these daughters of Jerusalem, who were, I guess, her competitors. And you just see how illicit relationships set up all kinds of conflicts all over the place. And, you know, it's the day of his weddings, and she laments King Solomon with the crown with which his mother has crowned him in the day of his wedding. Well, she'd been fantasizing about dragging Solomon down to her place, to her mum's place in Egypt. But now her worst nightmare is that Bathsheba, Solomon's mum, was going to be there putting a crown on his head at the day of his wedding, rejoicing that he's married the daughters of Zion. And of course, that's how it should have been. If you read Proverbs 31, it seems that that was by Bathsheba. It was her desire for Solomon to learn the principles that she was explaining there about the kind of woman he should marry, the virtuous woman. And of course, he does the very opposite, gets involved with all these worthless women, Gentile women, who were not at all the virtuous woman that his mother had spoken about. So it's all a tragedy, isn't it? It's all relationships gone wrong. And of course, we see them gone wrong all around us. On every, absolutely every hand, we see this. And we ought to learn. You know, we really ought to learn that this is not the way to happiness, to just get involved with who you want on the basis of externalities. And thank God that we have the basis for lasting relationships. If both parties are absolutely committed to the things of the God of Israel.